Hi, Craig. How are you?
I am well, Jamie. How are you?
I am very well, and we are so excited to talk with you about the concert that's coming up on August 14th in Saratoga. Before we get deep into that, though, there are a couple of other things that I do want to talk to you about. And the first thing I want to talk to you about is, how did you and David Cassidy first meet, Craig?
Great question. I was hired by a label called 180 Music to remix the Partridge Family's greatest hits.
Oh, fun. Okay.
And they were actually working with Kenny Loggins and a few different artists. David was one of them, and the concept was to take something, I didn't think it was very flattering, but basically they said, take something old and marry it to something new and, you know, reinvigorate what they're doing.
Okay.
And so I met David at a studio in Hollywood, and for the first time, and I think I was represented as a mixer as opposed to a musician.
Right.
So he came in and to use his words later, he said, "I just thought you were a button pusher." And we met, and he was very cordial, and he had a few folks with him, and we talked a little bit, and then he decided he wanted to go upstairs and check out some of the guitars that were up there. So he went up there, and I followed him, and he sat down and started playing guitar and singing, and one of the fellows with him started playing drums, and there was a piano there, and I slid down behind the piano and started playing with him, and he just looked over at me like, "What are you doing?"
Wow.
And then we just started playing. I think it was, we were doing like Joe Cocker's Feeling All Right, or, you know, some classic, you know, 60s, 70s song.
Right.
And he got this big smile on his face. He was like, he was like, "Wow, that is just, I had no idea." And then we must have played for half an hour, 40 minutes, just spontaneously. He slid in and out of some Beatles songs and whatever, just some of his favorite songs, Crossroads, maybe, I think, Clapton's Crossroads.
Wow.
And we ended up having a blast together, and that's when he, you know, made the, you know, "I thought you were a button pusher" comment, and, you know, "I really love how you play." And we got to be good friends over the period of that year, where basically I had to chase him around the country because he never had time to show up at a studio because he was touring a lot, you know, and I would show up at his hotel room with a laptop and, you know, a vintage microphone and some headphones to record his vocals over tracks that I were pulling together. And he just thought it was the weirdest thing. But once he got used to sitting there recording in his suite,
right,
and he didn't even have to get out of his bathrobe some of the time, he loved it. He was like, you know, "I could get used to this technology thing." Because he always would say, "I'm an analog guy. I'm not a digital guy."
Right, right.
I have to take credit for being the person that that taught him how to text, and I ended up torturing many people downstream, because when he got his iPhone, he was all over it. I mean, he was constantly texting. Once we digitized him, I said, "We have digitized the DC."
I love it.
Yeah.
I love that you had to drag him kicking and screaming into it, and then loved it. I love it.
Oh yeah. And then once I showed him YouTube, it was really bad, because then he could go back and look at all the old, you know, video clips of various artists that he loved, and he could see his dad, and he could see his brother. I mean, you know, whatever. I mean, it was a whole world that he just, it was actually kind of hilarious to watch. It was sort of like a child, you know, the first time, you show him something that they haven't experienced before. And you know, I miss that about him. He had a real joy when he connected with things. I mean, he would just have this infectious smile.
Yeah, I think we can all agree, those of us who love David for so long. I love to tell the story that the very first concert I saw was David Cassidy in Saratoga back in 1971. And the several times that I got to meet him, I was lucky enough to meet him. I told him that story. And the first time he was kind of cordial about it, and then the second or third time that I had the chance to actually spend time with him and sit down and talk with him for a while, he just thought it was the most hysterical thing, like the greatest thing, like that we had this shared history, but we were both in very different places in our lives.
Yeah, kind of, sort of.
But we were lucky enough, obviously, to have him here upstate a lot, especially during these months of July and August. David was a huge fan, obviously, of Saratoga. And before I get to the concert that's coming up, and we're speaking with Craig Jay, who is David Cassidy's close friend and longtime band member. And before we get to his passion for the animals and the track and everything about that, I do want to talk about David's final EP, Songs My Father Taught Me. We got to see a little bit of him recording that in the documentary that ran on A&E with you and the rest of the band members. How did it all come together? Sadly, David passed before the EP was actually finished. How did it all come together after that, with obviously all of your help?
Well, the EP we actually started a couple of years before. The EP had been in the works for a long time. So the show was well after the fact. It was something that he wanted to do. And music was going to be a part of it. But the EP probably started a couple of years before. We were in Hollywood working on Ruby and the Rockets. The show that he did for a year with his brothers. Yep. And David and I had been, he had been talking about how he really wanted to transition into doing some other things. And I was helping him brainstorm a little bit. And I had always thought that he's really was a fantastic jazz musician. He's a really great improviser. I mean, people didn't realize we would get on stage and he'd be like a great quarterback. He'd audible. I mean, we'd have a set list, but he'd go, no, we're going to do this now. No, we're going to do this now. And he'd change the tempo. He might change the key. He might only do a part of the song if he didn't feel it was working the way he wanted to and get out of it early. I mean, he was always improvising and playing and moving things around. So, you know, when he started talking about his dad and his desire to improvise, I said, you know, you should think about maybe doing some classic songs that might have some meaning for you. And we were off and running. I mean, he had a running list of 20 or 30 songs, that some of which, you know, were connected to his parents, some of which he was just personally connected to, and some of which were just songs that he liked that he had always wanted to cover but never had gotten around to doing that.
Right.
And so we actually played as an experiment with a soul classic, Can't Get Next to You. And just for fun, we kind of mocked that up, and he sang all the parts, and I did a quick little arrangement of it, and it was awesome. And that kind of sat there for a while, and we started talking about it. And I don't remember how it came to be, but one day he said, you know, I really want to do Night and Day. You know, Cole Porter was a friend of my dad's. It's a classic song. I think I can do this. And that's really how the EP was born, probably a couple of years prior, because we started to do that song in our set.
Okay.
And once we started doing that, then that led to us talking about doing other songs moving forward. By the time we got to doing the A&E special, each of those four songs we ended up doing, Summertime, we had performed live many times. He and I would start as a duet and the band would join us. The BB song, Sweet Little Angel, he was a huge BB fan.
Wow.
We did that as a tribute to him because he loved blues guitar. He loved singing it. I thought he played the crap out of it. And then Wish You Were Here was the fourth song on the EP that he sang, which was a song his dad did as a part of early in his career, a musical that he was a star of. And the version of it that he did, I just was so haunting because for a year he couldn't sing it. Literally, he would come into the studio, he would start to sing it, he would get overwhelmed by emotion and just walk out of the booth. I can't sing this now. And he would be in tears, or he would just be choked up because he just couldn't get his head around it.
Sure,
so
sure.
To finally get that performance out of him where, yes, you know, he was at that point compromised because we didn't realize how sick he was at that time.
Right.
But it had so much emotion. And I just hope people can connect with the emotion, because it was kind of like the classic Rick Rubin, Johnny Cash recordings, where, you know, at the end of Johnny's life, he didn't necessarily have everything in the tank that he had in terms of technique, but but it was oozing with emotion and vibe and pathos, and just, you listen to him sing Hurt, it's incredible. And that's the feeling I get when David sings Wish You Were Here. I mean, I feel the pain and the loss. And on that track in particular, his background singer and drummer, Terry Cote, who was a member of the band for many, many years, and they sang beautifully together. We kind of did the Natalie Cole, Nat King Cole thing, where she came in and sang with him almost as after the fact. You know, she's mirroring the Wish You Were Here, because obviously we wish he was there.
Right, and sounds so beautiful, Craig. It is exactly what you say. It's emotional and it's, beautiful and, almost ghostly. It's so gorgeous.
It is the last thing he sang. It literally is the last thing he ever sang.
Wow.
I mean, think about that for a second, but that's what's so powerful about that. And thank you. I'm glad that you connected with it, because I listened to it and it messes me up. I'm just like, and he didn't want to sing it. And off camera, I said, look, I know you don't feel well. We're going to figure that out. Cause I thought he had I thought he had a flu. I mean, we had no idea.
Sure.
So the fact that we got that performance out of him when he really didn't want to sing, and he said, okay, yeah, let's do this. I will take a shot at it. I'm just so thankful that we did end up getting that out of him.
Yeah, and I think a lot of us are too. I mean, it really is so beautiful to listen to, and I highly recommend everyone listen to it, because it's absolutely gorgeous. And I want to lead into, because obviously you, as a personal friend of David, you miss him terribly. Us as fans, we miss knowing that he's there doing his thing. I want to talk about how this event came about in Saratoga to benefit the charity that was so close to David's heart, because we did know here in the Capital District how much he loved horses, how much he loved the track. How did this all come about, Craig?
Well, I can't take credit for it, because it was really Linda Ambrosio and Terry Cote who pulled us together. Terry and David had a mutual love of horses.
Okay.
I mean, Terry had horses of her own up on the mountain. She lived in Morgan for a long time. And they had this bond over horses. And we did a benefit a few years back, and David was staying with Jerry and Darlene. They opened up this whole other world to us that we didn't even know existed. And, when we heard about this charity and what they were doing, and I have my sister-in-law is also an equestrian, we just thought, wow, this is a really great way to do two things. One, to memorialize David in a way that's not maudlin, right?
Right.
I mean, this is something that he loved, to your point. He loved animals. He loved horses. He was very passionate about his horses while he was in that mode. And for us all to get together and memorialize him in song, because that was his other passion, obviously, was music.
Right.
And so to me, I think, when they talked about doing this, and, at first I wasn't quite sure how it would work, but then as we thought about it, having all of us sing different songs and having it be all people that have, worked with him over the years to varying degrees, and to let the fans come and be a part of that in a part of the country, to your point, that was special to him, is really, that was the magic, I think, combination. But, hats off to Linda and Terry in particular.
Well, we are so looking forward to it. The special concert is happening Tuesday night at 7:30 at Putnam Place, which is at 63 Putnam Street in Saratoga Springs. And it's just going to be amazing. And all the information on how to get tickets is up on our website at 983try.com, keyword events. Craig, I can't thank you enough for joining us. There's a lot of David fans, for obvious reasons, here in this area, not just because of his past, but because of, as you said, he would always spend time here. People were always running into him in restaurants or at the track. And he, as always, was a cordial and kind and a lovely man. So I just think this is going to be such a great event coming up on Tuesday night. So for all of us here in the Capital District, we really thank you.
No, thank you. And I especially want to thank Tiffany Albert, because she donated the venue. And it, without her doing so and the way that it worked out, I mean, we're really excited to check that out. And we're also really excited to have Roger at High Peak Sound contributing as well. Shout out to him as well, because it takes a village to get these things done. And we're all coming in from different parts of the country to do this, and we're going to rehearse a day and then go do it and have fun and have, hopefully we'll have a good turnout and raise some money and memorialize DC and have a great time.
It sounds like it is going to be all of that and more, and we cannot wait for it. Again, Craig, thank you so much. I know you're a busy guy. You do a lot of things. So thank you for giving us some time this morning. I really appreciate it, and we look forward to seeing you Tuesday night.
Thank you. We'll see you Tuesday night.
Take care.
Take care. Cheers.